Welcome to Leonard Birdsong Radio on TalkZone.com. Your host, Leonard Birdsong, is a law professor, a former diplomat, and a former federal prosecutor who's here to inform and entertain you with a mix of humor, opinion, and information. Now, here's Leonard Birdsong.
Yes, it is Leonard Birdsong with you back again on Talk Zone. So glad that you can be with me. As usual, I'm broadcasting from the city beautiful. That's Orlando, Florida. 90 degrees already today. As you know, my show is a unique blend of humor and opinion, storytelling, and information. There will never be any fake news on Leonard Birdsong Radio. Big show today. We're going to talk about, or at least I'm going to tell you about some of the dumb criminal law stories I've been working on this summer. And I want to talk about presidential pardons. I'm going to also talk about the grand jury in Washington, D.C., a place I know very well, and about grand jury in general. Most people don't know much about the grand jury. I want to get started with some dumb criminal law stories. Here's the first story from California. The headline, "What a Boob." A woman won an $18,000 judgment against a plastic surgeon who posted pictures of her surgically enhanced breasts along with her name. Mandy Stillwell, 39, maintained she had agreed to let Fresno, California surgeon Dr. Enriqueta Lopez to take photos of her bare breasts for advertising, as long as she remained anonymous. Months later, Stillwell's names and breast photos were online. Oops. What a boob. Another story from California. Headline, "Say cheese and smile." We learned that FBI agents in San Francisco are searching for the so-called smiling face bandit, a six-time bank robber who always wears a big grin during his stick-ups. Authorities find it's not a laughing matter because they contend that the bandit carried a weapon in four of the six heists since May 20th of this year. He is considered to be armed and dangerous. If a smiling face bandit comes into your bank, be careful. All right, here's a... All right, it is sort of funny. Okay. Now this one, I don't know if it's funny or it's sad. It's this last story I have today from Florida, the headline read, quote, "Peek in the police car before trying to steal it," end quote. A young moron tried to force open the passenger side door of a police cruiser with Fort Pierce officer Robbie Troutman sitting behind the wheel. This is according to prosecutors. The suspect, Aaron Rodriguez, who's 20 years old, took off, but Troutman and fellow officers made a quick arrest. He is now in jail in Fort Pierce, Florida. Attempted motor vehicle theft. Well, those are our stories, dumb criminal law stories for this week. They never end. They're always there, and Professor Birdsong is here to read some of them for you. You know, our president, Donald Trump, has things hanging over his head. Did he collude with the Russians? We don't know. There's an investigation going on. Did his campaign collude with the Russians for him to win? We don't know for sure, but there's an investigation going on, and the investigation is led by Robert Mueller, who used to be the head of the FBI, person I know personally. I know him to be a good prosecutor, a lifelong prosecutor. Now, because of it, what's going on, and that President Trump is under fire, under investigation, he's been talking about maybe he needs to learn more about pardons. And the question comes up, can he pardon his friends and relatives who may be caught up in this whole investigation of the Russian or possible Russian collusion? Can he pardon himself? Well, what does this Constitution say about pardons? I have the Constitution here in my hand. It's a little booklet. We're in Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. It talks about the president shall be the commander-in-chief of the Navy and the Army. And among other things, says that the president shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons of offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. An impeachment, if the president tries to pardon himself before impeachment, he can't do that. So, but can he, what can a president do about pardons? Lawrence Tribe is a professor at Harvard Law School, a constitutional professor, constitutional law professor. A fellow by the name of Richard Painter is a law professor at the University of Minnesota who was once the House ethics lawyer for President George W. Bush. And Norman Eisen is a fellow at the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C., and he was President Obama's House ethics lawyer from 2009 to 2011. Now, they've written some stuff that I want you to hear about. 4 days before Richard Nixon resigned, his own Justice Department Office of Legal Counsel wrote an opinion citing that the president cannot pardon himself, citing the fundamental rule that no one may be a judge in his own case means a president can't pardon himself. The writers of this article, they're all lawyers and scholars, agree with this. The Justice Department was right that guidance could be found in the enduring principles that no one can be both the judge and the defendant in the same manner, and that no one is above the law. This comes from England. It's the bedrock of our legal system. The Constitution specifically bars the president from using the pardon power to prevent his own impeachment and removal. And it adds that any official removed through impeachment remains fully subject to criminal prosecution. That provision would make no sense if the president could pardon himself. The pardon provision of the Constitution is there to enable a president to act essentially in the role of a judge of another person's criminal case and to intervene on behalf of the defendant when the president determines that it would be equitable to do so. Here's an example. The president might believe the courts made the wrong decision about someone's guilt or about their sentence. President Barack Obama felt that way about excessive sentences for low-level drug dealers. Or the president might be impressed by the defendant's subsequent conduct, using powers far exceeding those of a parole board, might issue a pardon or a commutation of a sentence. Now, other equitable considerations could also weigh in favor of leniency. A president might choose to grant a pardon before prosecution of a person when the president believes that the prosecution is not in the national interest. President Gerald Ford pardoned Nixon in part for this reason in 1974. Also, a president may conclude that even if a person has committed a crime, he was acting in good faith to protect the national interest. President George Bush, that's George H.W. Bush, pardoned former Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger in the Iran-Contra affair for that reason. Today, I want to talk to you about the grand jury. Some of you may follow the news know that Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating whether the Trump campaign, the president's Trump campaign, colluded with the Russians. And he has been doing investigative work through the grand jury. First of all, the one in Arlington, Virginia, which is across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. We learned this week that Mr. Mueller has opened up a grand jury in Washington, D.C. Now, a lot of Republicans criticize this because Washington, D.C. is a Democratic city. Most people vote Democratic. And people are saying, well, they went to D.C. because of the fact that most of the people are Democrats and they probably wouldn't like a Republican. But, you know, look, I lived in Washington, D.C. most of my adult life. The demographics of Washington, D.C. are 49% African-American, 39% white, 11% Hispanic. everyone gets along pretty well. Yeah, there are a lot of Democrats there, but it's a city that takes law and order seriously. Now, what is a grand jury? A grand jury is a secretive body that does investigations. The grand jury system is an institution that grew out of English-speaking countries, and the concept of the grand jury is established in the Fifth Amendment of our Constitution. Let me read it to you. I have the Constitution right here in my hand. Amendment 5, first clause here says, "No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia." So this thing about capital or infamous crimes, that's language from the 18th century. It basically means a capital crime is one for which you can be put to death, and an infamous crime is a felony crime, one for which you can go to prison. So grand juries are secretive bodies. I, as an assistant U.S. attorney, that is a federal prosecutor in Washington, D.C., back in the 1980s, had to do grand jury work as part of my rotation in the U.S. Attorney's office there. As a matter of fact, I spent a year doing grand jury work, and this was basically 1981 and 82, a long time ago, but I learned a lot about it. Now, let's just talk, what about a grand jury? I guess the best legal definition, it's a group of citizens usually chosen from the same pool as trial jurors. In Washington, D.C., the grand jurors are chosen from the motor voter rules, the motor vehicle rolls, people who have registered their vehicles, and also from the voting rolls. The grand jury is composed of not less than 12 and not more than 23 persons. This is the federal court. The number shall never be less than 16 or more than 13. Now, grand juries differ from trial juries because trial jurors have to come to a unanimous decision to find a person guilty of a crime. Unlike grand juries, trial juries cannot indict a person, but they can indict a person on a majority and not necessarily a unanimous vote. In other words, if you have 12 jurors in a federal trial, they have to be unanimous. In the grand jury, there are 23 jurors, a majority vote, that is, 12 is enough to indict a person. The grand jury is only there to determine probable cause. There is no need for the jury to hear all the evidence or even conflicting evidence. It's left to the good faith of the prosecutor to present conflicting evidence. Now, unlike trial juries, grand juries do not usually convene daily. Instead, many grand juries sit only once a week or twice a month. Federal grand juries generally last 18 months. They can be extended to 6 months, and as I say, the jurors don't have to come every day. Now, grand juries have subpoena power. They can force, that is, subpoena you to present evidence to the grand jury. Now, if you think you should not have to testify and the request is unreasonable or oppressive, you can file a motion to quash the subpoena. Not many of them are quashed, I'll tell you that. Now, if you refuse to do what a subpoena asks, and there are two kinds of subpoenas. One is just a regular subpoena that tells you come down to the grand jury and testify truthfully. Then there's one that says it's called a subpoena deuces tecum. That means you come down to the grand jury with certain records and you turn those records over to the grand jury. Now, if you simply refuse to do what the subpoena ask you to do, you can be held in civil contempt of court. That is, you can be fined. It's not criminal intent. If you're held in civil contempt, you can be jailed until you agree to comply with the subpoena or until the grand jury's term ends, whichever comes first. We know that this weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, that's the home of the University of Virginia, which was founded by one of our presidents, an early president, Thomas Jefferson. We know that some white supremacists, some KKK, and some neo-Nazis got a permit to have a rally in a park on the campus of the University of Virginia, and there was a clash with anti-protesters. It was an organization, a new organization, a white supremacist led by a fellow by the name of Richard Spencer. He's organized groups from all over the United States to come to a rally, or he advertised for a group to come to a rally last weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia. It was called Unite the Right. The right was considered of what sometimes called the alt-right in the United States, made up of neo-Nazis, white supremacists, Ku Klux Klan, skinheads, and all people who want to have a white homeland for themselves and to have people of color and other religions thrown out of the United States. I don't think it's going to happen. But as we all probably know now, that the march on Friday did not go well. There was a clash between counter-demonstrators and the neo-Nazis and white supremacists. And the white supremacists and the neo-Nazis had been marching with tiki torches, and they'd been shouting racist slurs. And pretty much it was like the Nuremberg rallies of the Nazis in the 1930s, where they used to have nighttime torch-lit parades in Nuremberg to show their growing strength. On Saturday, anti-alt-right people gathered near the university, and a white supremacist, he drove his car into a group of protesters, killing one and injuring 19. A young lady by the name of Heather Hires, who was about 32 years old and a paralegal at a law firm, was killed. She was buried yesterday. As a result of all of this, the President of the United States said very little about it for a couple of days, and then he came out with some statements blaming not just the alt-right, the neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, the white supremacists, but he said everybody, both sides, were guilty of the violence. Now, there's been a lot of complaints about Donald Trump's handling of this matter. There's a fellow by the name of David Rothkopf who wrote a little paper or a little article for the Washington Post. He is a visiting professor of international public affairs at Columbia University. These are not my words. You're going to hear my words soon. But he writes, Donald Trump on Tuesday afternoon gave the most disgusting and public performance in the history of the American presidency. Framed by the vulgar excess of the lobby of Trump Tower, the President of the United States shook loose the constraints of his more decent-minded advisors and, speaking from his heart, defended white supremacists and, by extension, their credos of hatred. He equated with those thugs the courageous Americans who had gathered to stand up to racism, anti-Semitism, and the doctrine of violence that won cheers and Nazi salutes of the alt-right hordes to whom Trump must have felt such loyalty. After several days in which Trump had, and his advisors had wrestled with what should have been a straightforward task, that is, condemning the instigators of the unrest, Trump revealed the reason that finding those words was such a struggle. Why? He is an extremist. Now, this is David Rothkopf writing. He goes on to say, No one who values the best of what the United States has stood for could watch without feeling revulsion, anger, or heartbreak. No one who comes from a past such as mine, Mr. Rothkopf is Jewish, says that Trump's performance was horrible, and it was against the basic rights of the United States. And he thinks that we shouldn't condone this, and he goes on to talk about leaders outside of the United States who have condemned President Trump. Now, Mr. Rothkopf is a liberal, but there's also a conservative, a fellow by the name of John Podesta, a very good conservative writer, who's also came out against Trump and what he said. Among other things, John Podesta wrote that President Trump said that there may have been some very good people rallying with a permit by the statute of Robert E. Lee in Charlottesville. And maybe he thought so because the photographs we all saw showed clean-cut young men in polo shirts and Dockers. The rest of us also saw them engaging in Nazi salutes and carrying torches. These images seem to have eluded the president. The president suggested many had been there on Friday because they cared deeply about the fact that Robert E. Lee's statue in the Charlottesville Park is due to be removed. Podesta goes on to write, Trump did not note that they were not locals with aesthetic concerns, but rather had been summoned from all over the country under the slogan of Unite the Right. The ad promoting the Unite the Right rally, which ran on far-right websites all of last week, did not even mention the statue. It was designed to evoke a fascist poster with birds similar to the Nazi eagle in the sky over the marchers and Confederate flags taking the place of swastikas. It invited people to join speakers like Mike Enoch, who hosts a podcast called The Daily Show, and Augustus Invictus, an alt-right figure who once said, I have prophesied for years that I was born for a great war, blah, blah, blah. Podesta says that a fellow by the name of David French writes, when Trump carves the alt-right away from the Nazis and distinguishes them from the neo-Confederates, he's doing exactly what they want. He's making them respectable. He's making them different. That such words could actually emerge from the mouth of the President of the United States is one of the most disheartening facts of my lifetime, says Podesta. So you've heard some words of a conservative writer and of a liberal writer. My own words are, I condemn white supremacy. I condemn neo-Nazis. I condemn the Ku Klux Klan. They are haters and really have no reason to be Americans. They should leave. I do not have to leave. I believe in the Constitution and believe that all men and women are created equal. Now, I could say a lot about this, but let me just cut through to the chase that I want to talk about. I'm going to just say this. I do not know why young men, the young men I saw on TV in the film clips, wearing their polo shirts and their Dockers and carrying shields and spouting off about Jews and N-word people, things like this, I don't know why they feel that this is a good thing to be a part of. A neo-Nazi, a white supremacist, the Ku Klux Klan. Why would you want to join these organizations? This has all failed. The Nazi regime went down in flames in 1945. They were losers. The Confederate States of America went down in flames. They lost the Civil War that they started. White supremacy has been outlawed in the United States. Why do you want to be associated with losers? It's been good to be with you. I'll be back with you next week on the 24th of August. Have a good week, folks. This is Leonard Birdsong signing off. Thank you for being here.